Resorts World Catskills, where luxury and excitement are so close by. Catch all the sports action and so much more at Resorts World Catskills. Dial *RWCAT to learn more.
The Dave Rothenberg Show on 98.7 ESPN.
I mean, we all just get drunk on stupidity sometimes, and we really just need to take a step back. And here's what happens. And it was very, very innocent, but of course it has to turn into a headline. And that, of course, started, I think it was Thursday, when David Fizdale was asked about Kristaps Porzingis and whether or not he was closer to returning, because we're getting, you know, every point you get to the middle of a month, is that you say, okay, now it's been 9 months since the injury, and everybody's still waiting for when Porzingis will come back. And there's a lot of speculation from some people who are uninformed that he will not play at all this season. And so Fizdale, just not wanting to make it all about KP, not wanting to take to put some pressure on the kid because he is working his way back, not wanting to turn this thing into a story, he just downplays it, like, I'm not even really thinking about him. I'm not thinking about him. I have to focus on the guys that are healthy. And when he's ready to play, I already know where he's going to fit, so I'm not even thinking about it. He was just trying to downplay it. You know, well, what's he doing? Is he sprinting? No, he's not doing anything. He's not doing anything like that. And so, of course, it's a, oh my God, he's not sprinting. He's not doing this. He's not doing that. And we have to create headlines about it. And you could try to tell me that this isn't a media-inspired thing. It absolutely is. Absolutely is. Because do you just take the coach's word for it? Like, is that what you do? Like, he's not sprinting, so you just overreact? So that's what happens. So you get the story, and that's what we need. We always need our story, right? We do the same thing in radio. It's the same thing in radio as it is in print. We need our story. We need our headline. What are we going to talk about? And let's run with it. And that's what we do. So from there, of course, Kristaps Porzingis sees the headlines, clearly got triggered, goes to social media on Instagram, puts a couple of stories up showing pictures of him sprinting on a track outside, and then, you know, also a little message, this is BS. And that's, now it's ugly, right? Now it becomes uncomfortable, it becomes ugly, it becomes unnecessary. All this stuff has to happen, and of course, now the next day, what happens? And now David Fizdale's got to step out, he's got to face the music, and I thought he handled it well. Here's how he handled it yesterday in practice. Go ahead, Ty.
I didn't realize he had went out to the track.
Okay.
And so, but I was happy as hell to see that stride. I know that. I might go out with him next time and do some power walking. Because that was, man, that got me out of the bed when I saw that. So, but in here, he hadn't done any of that stuff. And that's, you know, I'm locked into the gym. So, I didn't realize that he had taken that next step to go to the track and start performing, you know, getting his stride in order and getting that leg feeling good about running his normal stride. So, but like I said, I'm excited to see that. That was a real boost for all of us.
Now, he's got to speak with enthusiasm about him, right? I mean, that's what he, oh, I thought it looked great. I didn't realize it. Let me just, a word to the wise. And I said this yesterday when I was filling in for Stephen A. There is a big difference between sprinting in a gym and sprinting on a track. All right. Sprinting in a gym, you basically have 94 feet and then you got to stop. If you don't stop, you know what happens? Yeah. You run right into a wall. So you got to stop. And if you've ever had an ACL, if you ever went through that rehab process, stopping on a dime on a new ACL is scary. And it's not something they want you to do right away, especially if you're going to stop and pivot and go the other direction. Those are things that they take a long time for you to start doing. You ease into something like that, because that puts a lot of stress on the ACL. So sprinting on a track, that's a great thing to see. But it's not the same thing, not even close to the same thing as doing it in a gym. So let's just start with that. But that stuff is all, to me, irrelevant. Kristaps Porzingis will return this season. And when he does return, it's probably, to me, I would give it an entire year. I'm looking at February, and maybe he'll surprise me and come back sooner. But I am looking at February as when he'll be back. So beyond that, however, here's something that I think we need to understand, is that part of Kristaps Porzingis' upbringing as a Knicks player, and this is where I want to ask you at 800-919-3776, because when I initially saw it, my reaction right away was, why? Like, why? And my why was directed towards Porzingis. Like, that's, like, to go to social media and put up some pictures, that was a very mellow thing for him to do. You remember, Carmelo was doing a lot of that stuff, answering to Phil Jackson, things that Phil was saying, things that media were saying about him, because Melo had reached that point where he was just frustrated. And he knew he couldn't talk to Phil anymore. He was tired of talking to Phil. So he went to social media. And why? Because Phil would go to social media and Phil would say things. So it became more of a social media battle. And that's when the circus really took off once again around the Knicks. And Porzingis didn't want to have his exit interview with Phil because he didn't like the direction of the franchise. He wasn't happy with what he saw going on, how Melo was being treated, how players were treated. The fact that Phil would go publicly with social media posts when he didn't like something that he saw. So if my only message is this for Porzingis and those who are advising him, if you don't want this franchise to be a circus, if you want this franchise to have some stability, then why would you bring the circus back? Because that's pretty much what you did. Like, if you don't want the circus, then don't bring the clowns. And that's kind of what you did when instead of just going man to man to Fizdale saying, well, what'd you say and why'd you say it? Right? Or, hey, you know what? What was that all about? And talk to him face to face, like handle that stuff behind closed doors so it's not embarrassing publicly. So you don't have media now having to react a second day. So you're not putting your coach now in a weird. Remember, this is the same guy that flew to Latvia, spent a whole week with your family, had dinner with you, really wanted to connect with you, went out of his way to make sure you understood how important you were to him. And he has a little bit of a misspeak. He kind of just is trying to quickly talk through something that was pretty obviously what he didn't want to do is put pressure on you, but also he didn't want to take any shine away from his players. Like, you know what? Let's blank it about these guys right now because KP's not ready yet. So with all that being said, your reaction is, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to post some stuff and I'm going to be all defiant. I'm going to go anti-establishment here. I'm going to get angry and show everybody how mad I am. I'm sorry, man. That is as immature as you could possibly handle it. I like the kid. I want to see him do great here. This is not hating. This is a dad talking right now. It's pretty much what it is. This is a dad talking right now. Because if I'm his dad, I'm like, what the hell are you doing? Like, go to your coach and talk to your coach. Don't go on social media. Don't start putting up pictures. And it's completely ambiguous. Are you mad at the coach? Are you mad at the media? What are you doing here? What is this all about? And I thought it was interesting what Fizdale said, actually. I saw this quote in the Daily News. And he just said, with this group of people that we've got here right now, our agendas are on point. Remember, that's what they're trying to create here. You know, on top of everything else that they're trying to build, the stability, everything else, Steve Mills and Scott Perry also trying to make, like, just calm everything down around here. Let's get back to respectability, that this isn't a circus. Because, you know, you do want free agents to want to come play here, and they don't want to come play here if it's a circus. And under Phil Jackson, it was a circus. So he said, so why let things linger? That's how stuff ends up festering into a real problem. It's usually some miscommunication or a misunderstanding and something you could have hashed out as an adult right there. So I stress that to all of these guys. Handle stuff face-to-face, eye-to-eye communication. Get it over with. There's your mic drop. That's basically what Fizdale's saying. And he's saying it in a nice way, but he's basically saying, like, if you got a problem, come talk to me. Don't go on social media. So Kristaps Porzingis is your star. He is supposed to be the face of the franchise right now. He's the guy everybody's anticipating to come back. And he's the guy that actually, if he's playing right now, we all know this. This team would probably win a lot more of their games that they've been close in lately. They've been a fun team to watch, but also maddening because they can't finish. You put him out there and maybe they finish some of these. So as this is going on, I do feel like it's a frustrating moment if you're a Knicks fan, because here's a young guy who watched, really learned his early days were with Carmelo Anthony. So he might have been, you know, he might have seen that, and that might have had the first impact on him, his first impression on how to handle things as an NBA player. And that's concerning to me. Here's a guy you want to commit 5 years, $150 million to. All these things are a concern. Because it's clear that either he's getting bad advice or he's not mature yet. And you can understand he's not mature yet because he's still fairly young. But what we saw out of Kristaps Porzingis, his quick reaction, how quickly triggered he was, is that a concern of yours? Or do you just pass this thing off as he's just a young kid and these guys handle this stuff? I have no problem with it. 800-919-3776 is the number. I still fully expect that he'll play this year. I think he's still going to be an all-star. I think he's going to be part of a great future with this team. But these are learning moments. These are teaching moments. And I'll tell you what, I thought Fizdale, by the way, handled it perfectly. What do you think? 800-919-3776. You can get me on Twitter, at Alan Hahn, A-L-A-N-H-A-H-N. Just getting started on a Saturday in New York City. Alan Hahn in for Dave Rothenberg on 98.7 ESPN.
The Dave Rothenberg Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Now, the one thing I can say, which is unlike the past, and this is where I actually think you have to, as fans, give the reporters credit here. Because a lot of times we see this complaining about how the media is creating this stuff. As I said to you in the opening segment, as media, look, whether you're print or radio, this we love having stuff to talk about. We love having stuff that becomes a story. That's what you want, right? So when you have a situation like this, all right, there's something going on there. Let's discuss it. And that's what you do as a member of the media. Now, there have been times in the past where media now perpetuate this for days upon days, turn it into something more than it is, create more controversy than necessary, and at times it's been handled poorly by the Knicks. This is not like that. Fizdale, I think, did a great job yesterday just completely putting on himself. He actually called himself a doofus, which is funny. Blamed himself completely and just passed it off. Like, you know, whatever, we'll get by this. It's good. It's all good. Everything's good. We're fine. And that's and credit to the media. They all seem to write the story that way today, the same thing. Like, this was really no big deal. This was a typical situation we're dealing with millennial athletes who, instead of going face-to-face with somebody to handle a concern, they go to social media and just complain. And unfortunately, this is a bad look for Porzingis. Bad. For a guy who's everything good. Unbelievably talented. Guy's a hard worker. Trying to get back. Wants to be great. All the things you want. I've said this before, and people kind of giggle, because I'm not putting them in the same stratosphere as far as their pro success yet. But Porzingis and Odell Beckham Jr. are pretty much the same. They're very much the same. They're both very sensitive to criticism. They both want to be great. They're both immensely talented. They're both have magnetic personalities where people are drawn to them. People love them. But they both also haven't accomplished anything yet. And when things go wrong, they both tend to go to social media. They both tend to overreact. They're both easily triggered. And that might not be a negative thing. Like, it's something that maybe guys like me, right? Generation X, I don't understand the way some people react. It's just, it's a generational thing. Whereas there's a different generation that they're just used to, and they're mad, just complain on social media. I feel better now. I got it out of my system. Where we look at it as you're complaining, you look at it as, no, I just need to get it off my chest. I'm good now. Like, so I need to understand that. So if you're maybe a millennial that can explain this to me, and I don't want to do this whole millennials thing because it's not where I'm going. I'm just saying that I don't understand it. I don't understand when you're mad about something that instead of just, you know, either calling someone, texting them, going face to face and saying, what was up with that? Instead, you just go to social media and you just kind of like, you know, complain a little bit and then you feel better, right? Like, if that's all it is, then just tell me, then I get it. I totally get it. But it's, you got to understand, from our perspective, from the older people's perspective, it's a bad look. That's all. 800-919-3776. Let's get some calls on this topic. Let's begin with a lot of calls already. Jay in the car. Go ahead, Jay.
Hey, my guy, Alan. How you doing today, man?
I'm good.
Hey, you know, I always enjoy talking to you. I don't always agree with you, and we don't always agree with one another, but I always enjoy talking to you.
That's the spice of life, man. That's the spice of life.
I'm cool with Porzingis. I like the way Tizza finished it as well, because a lot of times, the organization like to control the media, the narrative, and Porzingis put it out there where you're not going to put this on me, and he shut it down, and then Fizdale shut it down. So to me, I think both parts handled it perfectly, and I think now it shouldn't be really a big story. The biggest story to me is people think that Porzingis is worth $150 million. I've been... the advocate, you know, I've been saying this for a long time. I don't think he's worth that much money. I wouldn't invest in this guy. I wouldn't pay this guy. Even if he don't play this season, I'm definitely not signing him to that extension. Hmm. And even if he played, because I said from day one, he's always hurt. And then he's always hurt. And then he blew out his ACL. So now you always hurt. You blow that out now. And people got excited because the first couple of weeks of the season last year, like every season, he averaged like 35 and everybody averages 35 the first 2 weeks. What happened as the season goes on?
Come on, Jay. Everybody doesn't average 35 a game in the first 2 weeks of the season.
When the season starts, you know, everybody's healthy. They're feeling good. The first couple of weeks.
But, Jay, what you saw, first of all, I didn't cut you off because I think Porzingis and his people need to hear fans like you say stuff like this because I think they need to understand how fragile it still is. But I got to disagree with you on a couple of things. Number one, you have to pay him something, all right? He's a restricted free agent, so somebody's going to pay him. You're going to have to come up with something, and you might as well just give him the extension. That's one. You're going to pay him for what he's going to be, not what he's done. Usually your first contract out of your rookie deal is still a payment of what you're going to become, not what you've done. The other part is always hurt is a rough one because this guy was playing great in the beginning of the season, was an MVP candidate. He started to break down. That was more my concern, is that his battery kept draining out. The injury was a freak injury on an unbelievable... I mean, you have to admit, him dunking on Giannis Antetokounmpo is an unbelievable play. He landed because Giannis went underneath them.
Let's be honest. The first couple of weeks he played, let's put the great word on there. And then after those first couple of weeks, he was just a regular... Like, my thing is, you're saying that you're going to pay him for what he's worth. To me, he's going to be half of that. So let's say, like, the going number, I'm going to pay him what Tim Hardaway is worth because I put him and Tim Hardaway Jr. in the same category because Porzingis is not a guy, to me, that's going to change a game like a Durant, LeBron, Kobe, he's not one of the Steph Curry. He's not one of those guys. He's in the same class to me as a Draymond Green, as an Andrew Wiggins, where your numbers is going to look good, right?
Yeah, like Jay, I gotta let you go, but I appreciate it. I'll let you have your say. But you gotta, first of all, you're not paying him 30. He's not getting 30. You know, like that's not what he's getting. So you're paying him off a rookie scale. That's all you're paying him the max off a rookie, which you just sent Wiggins. Yeah, those guys, that's what all of them are getting. All of them. That's what they get. That's the standard. You're paying him for what he's going to be. Not what you think he is in his first 3 years when he comes into the league and he's still light and he still has to get his body right. Like he's a guy that came into the league and he physically had a lot of work to do to catch up to the grown men he was playing against. But when he had his moments, you saw there's flashes of something there. And I always believe that talent recognizes talent. I always believe that. And so when the best players in the league watch him play and talk about how good he can be, when a guy like Kevin Durant calls him a unicorn, when a guy like Kyrie Irving said, that's the kind of guy I'd love to play with, when you get that kind of respect from around the league, from the stars, that's legit. That's when you start believing in it. Because those guys recognize it. Because they understand it. Because that's the level that they're at. And when a guy is bogus, they'll let him know too. Trust me. I saw that in Miami a couple of years ago. I won't say who. I'm just saying I saw it. Emmanuel's in Flushing. Go ahead, Emmanuel.
Hey, Alan, how you doing?
Good.
Good to hear. Yes, and I agree with you at one point. I think that we live in a very time where athletes are now being sensitive when they're being heard by the media in a negative way. They often put on social media to prove a point. But let me ask you this, because you're sort of this Generation X thing. Would you have done it like in a different time if someone like any baby boomer, I don't know, maybe mover guy criticize you publicly and then you go to social media and done that if it was social media was there?
I mean, the thing is that when I was his age, right? So my generation, his age is the early 90s.
Yeah.
And we didn't have social media then. So there was nowhere else to go other than have your outburst, right? Other than, I guess back then it was more when the media came around with the microphones, that's when you said your piece. I guess there was a lot of that going on because back then was the beginnings of when SportsCenter became huge and a lot more sports coverage. So you had more 24-hour stuff. And maybe that's the difference, is that instead of social media, it was general media. I don't know how it would have been handled, say, 30 years ago without social media. I'm just saying that I'm trying to figure out, and thanks for the call, Emmanuel. I'm trying to figure out because I'm all about learning too. And I don't want to like get all over Porzingis if I'm misunderstanding what he's doing. Is that him just, I need to get this off my chest. So let me just put this out here. Now I feel better. You know, it's like they have these crying rooms now. You ever hear about these crying rooms? You know, like you need to get it out, but there's nowhere you can go. So you just go into this like closet like room and you just cry it out and then you walk out and you feel a lot better. Like I can't understand that, but okay. Like, if that's what this is, if that's all that was, put a couple pictures up, just get it out of my system. Now, mad. All right, I feel better now. You kind of laugh it off. He and, you know, because Fizdale did say they talked and everything's fine. And they should be fine. The guy's done everything that you've ever wanted a coach to do for you. Made you feel special. Kept you around the team. Talking about how great you are. What you're going to mean to this team. And he's never coached you before. And Fiz also knows he's got that Gasol thing hanging over his head. And that's unfair, too. To have that thing, to hang that thing over his head and remind him all the time how Marc Gasol, who was a bit of a diva in that situation and ran to the owner, all that was wrong. And Gasol later admitted it was wrong.
The Dave Rothenberg Show on 98.7 ESPN. The audio file.
All right, we love these stories. These stories about, you know, the first time something happened, these superstars, but before they were superstars and when they met other superstars. And it's just amazing how, you know, there are these moments of reality for everybody when you realize where you are in the pecking order of life. Well, at one point, Allen Iverson realized that he really wasn't a big star yet in the NBA. He recalled the first time he met Michael Jordan. Take a listen.
The first time I ever talked to him was that year playing in the rookie game. I'll never forget it because he said, "What's up, you little I'll never forget it. I looked at him like, all right, man.
What do you say back to that? Because it's somebody you nothing. Really rock with.
Nothing.
You just got to eat that, right?
Nothing. And then, like, I remember one time he told me, he said, I was telling him, I went to a Charlotte game, and I was telling him how much he meant to me and how much I rock with him. And he was like, man, you wouldn't rock with me like that because you wouldn't cross me like
right,
that.
Right, you wouldn't hit me with that crossover.
But that was just instant. I always knew that once I got to the league, I was going to try my move on the best. So he was just a victim that night.
And you remember, he got him. You remember, it's famous. It's everywhere. But how about that? Like, how about AI's reaction when he's like, all right. Like, what do you say? It's Michael Jordan. He calls you whatever he wants at that point. You have to just take it. Like, it's just, like, I mean, I just, that's, again, you meet your hero. And sometimes, like, they always tell those, you know, oh, he didn't let me down. He was the nicest guy in the world. And then there's times you meet your hero and he treats you like crap. And you just sit there going, I guess that's what makes you good, though, right? So, but AI did get him back in the end because he did cross him over. And if you haven't seen it, all you got to do is Google it. You'll see it. He got him good. Moving on. In the NBA, some interesting games last night. Like I said, the Nets got a nice win in Denver, ending Denver's – and Denver was undefeated at home in a tough place to play. Those Nuggets are very, very good. They were 9-2 going into the game. They're now 9-3. The Nets have won 3 in a row. They're now 6-6. So good on them as they now, of course, are greeted with celebrating by having to play a back-to-back against the Warriors, although no Steph Curry in that game. But also last night, in a game you saw on ESPN, was Celtics and the Jazz in Utah, and that, of course, is Gordon Hayward's return to Utah after he left the Jazz to sign with the Celtics and missed all last year with that broken leg. The Jazz end up winning the game. There was no Kyrie in this game. But Gordon Hayward had to hear it from the crowd every single time he touched the ball.
And no, not at all. I mean, I kind of expected some of that. It's part of the game. And, you know, I think that, you know, they were booing me from the get-go. So part of the game.
It's just part of the game. He played 25 minutes in this game, ended up with 13 points. As you can see, he's still trying to get himself back to the level he was when he left Utah, and he was a budding all-star, budding superstar, so to say. He already was an all-star. The Jazz had a tribute video for him, but they didn't put it on the scoreboard during the game because they had a feeling that the crowd was going to, that Utah crowd, by the way. You know, you think that's, oh, it's Utah, everybody's kind of nice and, you know, religious there. That's one of the nastiest crowds in the NBA. Notoriously nasty crowds. It's incredible. And so they kind of had a feeling that he was going to hear it. So they never showed it on the scoreboard. He never got to actually, you know how those moments when a player is back in his new arena, it's during a timeout and then they play the tribute and the crowd cheers and the player watches and sometimes a tear goes down his eye. No, that never happened. And they didn't want it to, they just didn't want him to deal with it, that whole video being booed. So they shared it on social media and that's just about it. So Gordon had to live through that as most players do. And the Celtics end up taking the L. So they are 7-5, and they are another team that's kind of weird. As I said, the Bucks. Watch the Bucks. As you heard just earlier this morning on 98.7 ESPN, Mike Quick had Villanova coach Jay Wright on. And Jay Wright had a very interesting name that he brought up on any players that he wished he was able to recruit and get for Villanova. Take a listen.
Donovan Mitchell. Love that kid, man. He came to our place, told us, all right, this is probably where I'm going to go. And then he went to, great recruiting story, came in with his mom and sister. They left. They said, you know what? He's going to come here, but we just promised Louisville we'd take a visit, so we're just going to drive down, and we'll drive back, and we'll commit when we return. And I'm on the beach, and I see on Twitter he's sitting in the Louisville locker room. I'm going to be a Cardinal.
Well, so Jay Wright can definitely relate to the Knicks then, sort of. I mean, the Knicks, although, passed on him, whereas Jay Wright wanted him and just couldn't get him. And you imagine, I mean, as if Villanova didn't have enough talent. Imagine Donovan Mitchell, but as a New York guy, like a local kid. And he ends up going to Louisville, and everybody knows this. You know, we know who he is now. But going into that draft, there was a lot of speculation about what is he as an NBA player. You know, playing in Pitino's system, you can't really shine as a guard. He was a multi-guard kind of player, felt undersized as a two, but not really good enough to be a point. And the Jazz took him at 13, and he's turned into an outstanding player. Just a great athlete, a terrific kid. And just an outstanding player.
Could you imagine? Could you imagine him and KP being a 1-2 punch?
Well, it still comes back to that, and people do have to know what happened in that war room. It's, you know, it's funny. The Giants had that same battle in their war room when they made their pick for Barkley. It was half Barkley, half Darnold, and the same thing happened with Neil Akita and Donovan. People think it was Dennis Smith Jr. I'm here to tell you, DSJ was not even in the conversation that night. Because they knew he didn't want to play for the Knicks. He had that connection to LeBron. He wouldn't let them examine his knee. He had the knee hit. And they were just like, you know what? Too many flags there. It was Mitchell. They loved the kid. A faction, at least, of the front office loved the kid. And Phil let one guy break the tie. That guy is no longer employed with the franchise. And that guy broke the tie. And that's why they went with Neil Akina instead of Donovan Mitchell. And that is a true story.
You hate to do it, but as a Knicks fan, it's always going to pain you. Because Steph Curry...
You couldn't control that.
You can't. Yeah, that's right. Something you can't control. The Warriors jumped. You know, the Warriors had the pick before you. They take him. But Donovan Mitchell was right there for the taking. And it's similar to what the Giants are going to have if Sam Darnold goes on to become a star. You could have had that guy.
Right.
And all of a sudden for the Knicks, your future, the landscape of your future could be that much brighter.
And you think about it. You had that pick, and then you had Frederick Weiss instead of taking Ron Artest. And they were Ron Artest, a New York guy, and they didn't take him, and they took the French guy. Donovan Mitchell, a New York guy, and they didn't take him, they took the French guy. Isn't it funny how if you don't learn from history, you're doomed to repeat it?
Preach it, brother.
I know, we're sad. Moving on. So, you know the Knicks have twice as many wins as the Washington Wizards? I mean, the Wizards did have that impressive win against that young Knicks team where they barely held them off. And it looked like they were going to finally get it right after a 1-7 start. They're now 2-9. And now it's time to start calling out the stars on this team. Because 2-9 is embarrassing. 2-9 for a Washington Wizards team that really should be a second round, a team that's a challenging playoff out with the backcourt that they have with Wall and Bradley Beal, Otto Porter. You know, this is a team that should be a lot better than 2-9, but you know what they've become? They've become that team that doesn't care. And we're not even a month into the damn season. And if you think they don't care, if you tell me that, all players care. Take a listen to John Wall and where he's at right now as their face of the franchise. Listen to this.
I ain't in the gym. I just left practice about an hour or two ago, so now I'm relaxing with my feet up. But don't tell the fans I said that. They think I'm supposed to stay in the gym all day. Go to Rose Bowl on Saturdays. What? Not for the party once in the blue while?
How did that inspire you, Wizards fans? Michelle, you're a Wizards fan. Does that inspire you?
Not in the least bit.
I am the first one to argue.
I'm disappointed thus far.
I am the first one to argue that you can't tell pro athletes they go to social media. Like I remember when Iman Shumpert was with the Knicks and he would post videos of him rapping in the studio and you'd get somebody would always comment, you should be in the gym working on your jump shot. And it's, I get it. The guys need a release. They need to get away and just relax. And I understand that. But when you're 2-9 or when your team has been underachieving, like I think it's wrong to put it in your fans' faces like, Yeah, I know you want me to work on my game, but I'm not doing that right now. Like, that's a really bad look.
Here's the problem with John Wall. He was drafted in 2010. A ton of problems with John Wall. But one of the issues with his mentality, you mentioned sometimes you check out. And great teams do that in the regular season. The Warriors did it. LeBron's teams do it. But what those teams have in common, they've had success.
Right.
In a decade, the Wizards have won 3 playoff series. Mm-hmm. So John Wall, Bradley Beal, none of those guys should be checking out in a regular season. None of those guys, because you haven't experienced any success. It's a joke. They call themselves the best backcourt in the NBA.
Oh, they're not.
And a couple of years ago, they said that the Cavs tanked to avoid playing them in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They talk so much for a team that's done nothing in the postseason.
And now I wonder, where does the blame lie? And Michelle, you certainly can answer this because you're a Wizards fan. Where is it? Coach? Is it Ernie? Is it the owner? Or is it simply the players? Like, they've got the wrong group, and they've got to break this team up.
I feel that it's the players. I was actually just having this conversation on Wednesday night with Larry Hardesty after his show, mm-hmm. and we were both saying in agreeance that it's time to kind of split this team up.
Who goes then? Because it's going to be hard to move that John Wall contract.
I would want to keep Beal, mm-hmm. but I think Beal should leave.
Now, remember, when John Wall was out last year, remember how well they played without him?
And then
he talked so much trash trying to, behind the scenes saying that they didn't really play well without him.
Right.
Gortat was the main one saying the ball is moving a lot
Everybody eats. Yeah. And then guess who got traded? Gortat got traded.
Well, Bradley Beal is the easiest to move because he's the better player.
And the contract isn't as painful as Wall's because Wall's hasn't even kicked in yet. And you can definitely get takers for him. But I do think that Wall becomes now an albatross on the franchise if this is what he's just become, a guy whose effort level will never get to 100%. The knees are always going to be a concern. He doesn't ever look like he's in great shape. He always looks like he's okay. And then once in a while, he gives you an effort that, like, you know what John Wall's become, and I hate to do this? John Wall's become like a poor man's Carmelo Anthony. Because Melo at least was great at for a number of years.
And Wall was great. Yeah, he was great.
But not for as long as Melo was.
No.
Was great for a long time.
No. But he was great for a short period of time.
Yeah. Okay.
A perennial all-star.
That's why I said poor man's. But he's become more like Carmelo, where there's a lot more apathy and a lot less intention. Like, and it's a lot of more, he does a lot more, like, it's fake now. He gives you that front of being a star who cares, but then on the back end, you kind of see it like, no, he doesn't really care.
But at least Melo
really not into this.
At least Melo gave you effort. John Wall is all about being flashy.
That's why I said poor man's. It's a very similar type situation to Melo, where as Melo got older and slower, he got more and more frustrating.
Yeah.
And what do you do with him? So
John Wall also doesn't really care necessarily because he doesn't really want to be in DC anymore.
Then why did he sign the extension?
To get the money.
That money.
Oh, come on. But you can't trade that. It's not tradable.
Secure the bag.
Yeah, I keep hearing that.
It's an Odell Beckham Jr. thing.
I keep hearing that. Yeah. All right, moving on from this conversation, because this is more and more depressing stuff. How about this funny one? So RJ Bell is on with Humpty Kenny and Rothenberg yesterday. They also talk with the K Show on Thursdays. We're going to talk with RJ in the 11 o'clock hour as well. And I'm sure this might come up, but this is interesting. So, of course, Alabama is the greatest college football team in the country. They're probably going to win the championship. They might be one of the best, obviously, I think they're the greatest college football program in the history of college sports. I think it's, with Nick Saban especially at the helm, they have been just every single year untouchable. So when you have that and compare it to just how abominable the Bills have been, especially with Nate Peterman at the quarterback position, you kind of wonder, these always come up, is, okay, if Vegas took it serious, what would the spread be, Bills and Alabama? Here's RJ.
If the Bills played the Rams on a neutral field, the line would be 17. So think about that. Rams to Bills, 17 points. Bills to Bama, 17 points.
Do you take 17 points? To think about this, it's the same exact Bills to the Rams as Alabama to the Bills. The same exact. So two pro teams. And remember, we had a game earlier where the Vikings, I think it was 16 or 17, that the Bills actually upset the Vikings. So what would you take there? Alabama, like, again, a total hypothetical fantasy world type situation. Alabama plays the Bills in a game. Vegas makes the spread. Bills plus 17. Do you take Alabama? Do you dare? Moving on. Rangers had a nice winning streak going. They had been playing very well. They're in Detroit against a weaker, younger Red Wings team. They're up 2-0. Everything's going well. Looked like the Rangers are going to keep the roll going. And then it all fell apart last night. Third period, they give up a couple of goals. And then in overtime, the great Don LaGreca calling this happening.
Maybe time for one last rush for the Rangers, but it's pitchforked into the Detroit zone. Green in transition finds Athanasiou with 8 seconds to go. Athanasiou with Larkin. Finds Larkin, who tips and scores with 5.1 seconds to go in overtime. And the Red Wings with three unanswered goals win this game in OT 3-2.
And there you go. The Rangers take, that's a frustrating loss. But Henrik Lundqvist, he smashed his stick over the crossbar. He was obviously visibly angry. And as good as things have been feeling for the Rangers on that winning streak, felt really bad at the way that game ended. All right, that's Audio Files. Thank you, Mish. Thank you, Ty.
The Dave Rothenberg Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Let's go around the league a little bit, RJ, and games that I think maybe you have your eye on. I could throw some at you, or you could tell me what games you like this week.
Yeah, let's do that. You know, one of the things we talk about on our different segments, as you said, Michael Kay, 4:45 on Thursday, and with the noon show on Friday, is we are in the biggest handicapping contest in the world here in Vegas. It's 5,000 to enter. Mm-hmm. It's called the Super Contest Gold, and we are right in the leaderboard right now, 65% on the year. Five picks a week.
Wow.
So what I do is on my Twitter on Sunday, I'll put out all five picks so you can get them at RJ in Vegas. But let me give you, as much as we have time for, the ones I like a lot. Seattle and the Rams, really like Seattle. And I get it. First thought is, oh, I don't want to bet against the Rams. They're really good. Well, we've talked about it. Betting against good teams, the best teams, and betting on the worst teams is the way to win. Why? Because the average bettor is going to think the best teams are better than they really are. You can be the best team and still be overrated. The Patriots are the perfect example. In 2007, the undefeated regular season, if you had bet them the last nine games, they went 8-1 straight up. You guys might remember the one loss in the Super Bowl to the Giants, but 1-8 against the spread. So if that team, the most dominant regular season team of all time,
or at least
in the modern era, they call the spread the great equalizer, and they always tend to overreact and make the best teams too expensive. Well, Rams, like we said, only covered one of the last six. You got a Seattle team that's motivated in the playoff hunt, can run the ball. And Rams don't stop the run all that effectively. You've got the fires in California, distraction. It actually affected the Rams' practice late in the week. Last thing, look ahead. Rams play maybe the biggest game of the year, one of them, Mexico City against Kansas City. So doesn't mean they don't want to win. It means, hey, they get up 7 late. They're not looking for margin. They're looking to get out of there because they got to play at altitude next week. One of the better bets of the week, Seattle, plus 10.
Okay. Next up.
Wow, that's it, huh? It's like, all right, RJ, keep giving it.
You know why? Well, number one, I'm writing them down, okay? I'm not going to lie to you. Number two, you wanted to get a couple in as you can.
Yeah,
My reaction is you're 100% right. I mean, I feel the same exact way with exactly what you said. Sometimes you get the hangover games where you just played your rival and you're emotionally, you can't get up for the next game. And you also have those look ahead games where you just had what happened to the Saints. You're embarrassed. You got a big matchup coming up next week and you got a Seattle team where you're like, meh. And you got, stuff going on in your hometown. So I completely agree that, 9.5 seems like a lot.
Yeah, and you can even get 10s out there. We mentioned I like the Giants, especially at 3.5. I also like the Raiders at 10. Let me give you another kind of contrarian play, one that the average listener is going to say, oh, no. Well, that's why. I like the Dolphins. And check this out. 30 years, let's go back in the NFL.
Another 9.5.
Yeah, and 10, and again, there's 10s out there.
See,
and
10's
again, 10's a key number. Right, because a lot of games end 10.
Right.
Last 30 years, second half of the season, when a team has a record of below 500, now that's the Packers, versus a team with a record above 500, that's Miami. This is the first time in 30 years the below 500 team is favored by 9 points or more. Think about that. 30 years of the NFL, we've never had in the second half of the season a below 500 team be favored by this much over an above 500 team. It doesn't make sense. All it's about, but it does make sense in the following way. Oh, Aaron Rodgers just lost to the Rams, just lost to the Patriots. He's mad. He wants to make a statement.
Emotion.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Or maybe he's fed up because his OC got let go in the offseason. He doesn't like his coach. Not saying he's not going to try to win, but I don't think it's just some statement. I think he wants to get out of there with a win and get ready for a tough rest of the season.
And that Miami defense is actually sneaky good. You know, that's not a bad Miami defense, but, you know, here's the other two factors. Now, you brought up two things that I asked you about and I wanted to ask you about, which are beyond the numbers, which is A, emotion, B, now I'll ask you about weather. So you bring up emotion with Aaron Rodgers and maybe that's factors into some people's decision. But how about the fact that it's Miami, warm weather, in Green Bay, colder weather now, weather coming through the Midwest, you know, at Lambeau. How much is also that going to be part of this factor?
You know, this has been a debate on our, we do a podcast, which is like two and a half hours of like deep dive into this stuff. And this was a big debate. One of our guys said, oh, they're in Miami. Now you can tell by my voice, I don't agree with this. Oh, Miami, it's 80 degrees. And now it's all, and it's like, wait a minute. It's 35 is what it's supposed to be. And they're playing football and they got space heaters. So I think that the threshold of the cold affecting a team is relative or is affected by the warm weatherness of a Miami team. But I don't think 35 gets you there. So to me, that's not a factor. All that said, this is one of those games, and it's kind of a new concept I've been talking about, which is it has a high risk of buyer's remorse. Meaning, if the Packers end up winning by 40, you're going to be like, wait a minute, what the heck was I thinking? or more specifically, what the heck was RJ thinking? He sounds smart, but that's crazy. All right.
No, not crazy. No, certainly not crazy.
Well, but that's the way that you're going to react, right? But if you bet
a lot. No, we got, I got a lot out of this for sure. And I know everybody else listening does as well. We got to run. RJ, great to talk to you. Thanks so much for the time. That was a Football Frenzy brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of New Rochelle. The Mercedes-Benz winter event going on now at Mercedes-Benz of New Rochelle. Stop in or visit them online at mbnewrochelle.com. Mercedes-Benz of New Rochelle, a proud member of the Pepe Auto Group, driven to perform since 1960.
The Dave Rothenberg Show on 98.7 ESPN.